that's Haunted Halloween Tape, Spooky Sounds, to chill your bones. Okay? Not take nice care of them, to chill them. Welcome to our show for Wednesday, October 12th. Now, as we talked about last time, we were going to get into something this time. That, you know, we had a first cross episode sort of thing. Where it wasn't a part two, but it was a whole different thing. This is a marketing ploy I've come up with. See, it's like, oh, you want to find out more, you got to listen again. Which I don't know, I would feel like anyone would just be like, oh, I didn't care about this in the first place, so perfect. Perfect that I don't need to listen to another part of it. That works out great that I know more of the same is coming. So here's what I decided to talk about today. And this takes us back to the past a little bit. Back to when I was a young man full of life, full of vim and vigor. So in 2003, Chuck Palahniuk wrote this book called Fugitives and Refugees, A Walk in Portland, Oregon. And it was kind of like this history of his life, but also of the city. And I read this book probably in like 2003 or 2004 and was like, that's where I want to go. I want to see what that's all about. Right? So I eventually did, probably in like 2005-ish, ended up going there. And it was great. All the stuff was great. Everything was great. And I've been there like every other year for the last 10 years. And it's changed a lot, but it's still great. You know, but it was like a weird place. It felt weird and fun. You know, weird and like there were weird people there, but not scary weird, I guess. I don't know how to put it. Like weird, but it knew it was weird. Weird on purpose, weird. You know, like they had, this was when they had the Voodoo Donut and it was in this tiny place and they had just recently discontinued their donut that had Pepto-Bismol frosting and like NyQuil jelly inside. So it was like for if you had a hangover. They used to have a contest at Voodoo Donut, which was like basically a dude would lay down and get an erection and then they'd see how many donuts could be stacked on it before it disappeared. And then whoever had the most donuts stacked would win. So, you know, weird stuff was going on at this time. They also had Swahili lessons and weddings. And, you know, we went, like, into the underground, and that was fun and weird, and just a bunch of weird stuff. And so I liked it a lot. And one of the places that I went and have been to every time I've gone is Powell's, right? The city of books. And it's changed over the last 10 years as well. Like, it used to be probably a little grungier. Like, the opening room is different now and stuff like that. And some sections have grown and others have shrank, but it's still pretty great. And so one thing that was weird when I went in there, because this is like 2006, right? So, you know, the internet's a thing, but it's not like a huge thing, right? It's not like now where you just get on and Google everything. And Amazon's a big thing, but it's not huge. Like, it's not you get something for $2 in 2 days. It was like, you know, you have to pay kind of a lot of money, and it takes several days to get there. So you didn't like, going to a bookstore was still interesting because you might see things that you'd never seen before. And when I went to Powell's this time, you know, I looked around and it was great and there were all the different sections. But then there was this one weird section of like indie presses, right? And it was all these independent books. And they had a lot of stuff there that was, you know, like maybe sort of McSweeney's-y type stuff. And they had, you know, like Trini Dalton and Joe Menno and people like this. But then they also had a lot of books that fall in the category of bizarro, which is what we're going to talk about today. So I find this section in the store and I was like, well, I'm home. This is the perfect spot because everything there was just fucking weird. You know, I bought this book, I think it was called Extinction Journals by Jeremy Robert Johnson, which is about an apocalypse where a guy makes an entire suit out of cockroaches, and that's how he survives, like, a nuclear holocaust. And, of course, eventually he runs into a guy who made a suit out of Twinkies to survive the holocaust, so it's like Twinkie suit versus cockroach suit. And one of the books, I think I bought 5 or 6 books, all from that section, right? And one of the books I bought was a book called The Menstruating Mall by Carlton Mellick III. I don't remember a ton about it, but here I think I could probably find it here and find a little description. And the covers are all different now. They're like these weird, vaguely romance, cheap, shitty erotica covers or something. But the cover it had before was very gross. Okay, let's see. 10 ridiculously stereotypical consumer victims. A yuppie, a housewife, a retiree, a jock, a Bible thumper, a cowboy, a preppy, a gamer, a goth, and a white suburban gangsta find themselves unable to leave the mall one day. There's nothing stopping them. The doors are unlocked. Other shoppers are able to come and go as they please, but for some inexplicable reason, these 10 people cannot pry themselves away from their shopping miasma. The mall closes, and they won't leave. Days pass, and they're still there, eating meals in the food court and sleeping in department store bedroom displays. Then they begin to die off one by one, murdered by a mysterious killer, and they still won't allow themselves to escape. Then things start to get really weird. And that's true. I feel like this doesn't quite capture the weirdness. The next time I went, you know, I again went to the same section, and like every time I've gone to Powell's, this section has shrunk a little bit, right? And the next time I went, I got a little book by the same guy called Satan Burger, which has a really unappetizing cover of like a guy. Basically, it's a guy squatting over a plate looking like he's going to take a dump on a plate. And Poonmaster Flex is like watching right now and just like scrunching her face in like, this is gross. Who are you? So Satan Burger is the international cult hit that has grown such an enormous following over the past 10 years that it not only launched the career of underground author Carlton Mellick III, but inspired an entire literary movement. God hates you, all of you. He closes the gates of heaven and wants you to rot on earth forever. Not only that, he is repossessing your souls and feeding them to a large vagina-shaped machine called the Walm, an interdimensional doorway that brings his new children into the world. He loves these new children, but he doesn't love you. They are more interesting than you. They are beautiful, psychotic, magical, sex-crazed, and deadly. They are turning your cities into apocalyptic chaos, and there's nothing you can do about it. Featuring a narrator who sees his body from a third-person perspective, a man whose flesh is dead but his body parts are alive and running amok, an overweight messiah, the personal life of the Grim Reaper, lots of classy sex and violence, and a motley group of squatter punks that team up with the devil to find their place in a world that doesn't want them anymore. And, like, I have to say the description is a lot more coherent than the book, but it was also super fun. So then, you know, I started reading more of these books, such as The Baby Jesus Butt Plug, which is an apt title. He wrote a children's book called The Faggiest Vampire, where two vampires basically have a mustache contest. Punkland. Ocean of Lard, which is a choose-your-own-adventure, except it's called a choose-your-own-mindfuck-fest. But he's got, he releases books quarterly. And the reason I thought of this was there's a book called Hammer Wives, which is basically short stories and a novella. And the novella reminded me of the Winchester Mystery House, right? So the book is about this old man, and he's like this old crippled dude, and he's got like these 6 wives, and they have normal bodies, but they have giant hammers for heads. And they basically mash things with their hammer heads, and then they have tiny little faces, and they suck the juices or whatever. And so this guy kind of gets tricked in, you know, it's a Twilight Zone thing. Basically, long story short, he gets tricked into, like, becoming the new husband of these hammer wives, and he tries to escape. They're building this giant house. He tries to escape, but they're building hallways and doorways and stuff faster than he can escape. So there's no escape. So let's just talk real quick about this author. I've got his about the author here. Let's see. Like a real-world Kilgore Trout, cult author Carlton Mellick III has been pumping out some of the weirdest, trashiest, most imaginative books you'll ever want to admit you secretly love. His books are released on a quarterly basis. Best known as one of the leading authors of the bizarro fiction movement in literature, he is also one of the most prolific authors of his generation, with over 40 books in print since 2001. He won the Wonderland Book Award for his novel Warrior Wolf Women of the Wasteland, and has had short stories make it into the year's best fantasy and horror and the best bizarro fiction of the decade. Although many of his earliest works are on the surreal and experimental side, his current style is to take the most ridiculous concepts imaginable and approach them with complete sincerity, as if they are not intended to be ridiculous at all. Always full of tongue-in-cheek humor, social satire, and told in a simplistic, straightforward prose style similar to that of children's literature or early pulp fiction, Carlton Mellick III's work is one of a kind, to say the least. He lives in Portland, Oregon, the bizarro Mecca. And there's also an FAQ where you can contact him at a Yahoo email address. I want to go down to here. Let's see. Why is the font so big in Menstruating Mall and Fishy Flesh? The font is huge. I admit now that I regret using large font in those books. My reason at the time was that the big font gave the books more of that juvenile, childlike, minimalistic feel that I strive for in my work. But these days I realize that it cheats readers who think they're getting a longer read. So no more 14-point font unless it's really meant to resemble a children's book like The Baby Jesus Butt Plug. Naturally. When did you start writing? I started writing when I was 10. I didn't fiddle around with writing. I didn't just write stories for fun. I set out to become a serious best-selling novelist at the age of 10. So I wrote novels. I completed 12 by the time I turned 18. Some of these were major 1,000-page epics, but none of them would become bestsellers. I was never satisfied with them, so I never even tried to get them published. These days, I'm still never satisfied with any of my books. None of them are bestsellers. But I am where I am because of that arrogant 10-year-old kid who seriously thought that a kid could accomplish anything if he tried hard enough. You said you wrote 12 books by the time you turned 18. What are they? Will they ever be published? No, they will never be published. They were good practice, but that's all they were. They certainly weren't well-written or worth reading, but some of them were conceptually decent. This is what they were about. 1. The Ghostly. My first book, which was written at age 10 or 11, it's a fairly traditional ghost story on the surface, but it toyed with the idea that a person sometimes inhales a wandering ghost by accident, and the ghost becomes trapped in the living person's body. Over time, the ghost melds with the person's consciousness and can influence the way he thinks. It was about 100 pages handwritten. I drew the cover and stapled the pages together. I lost the only copy a couple years after it was written. Now that's a tragedy. Although this is, okay, a 10-year-old kid, and he's like, what if you're inhaling ghosts and they're controlling your mind? I want to know, one of these FAQs should be like, oh, what are your parents like? Where are they? Let's see, 2, Steam of the Day, written at age 12. It was a story about a family in a summer cabin that get attacked by rabid wolves. Some kind of supernatural mist would go through the woods every day at twilight and cause emotions to intensify. Not only does the wildlife attack them, but the family members get infected by the mist and begin attacking each other mentally, physically, and even sexually. Probably one of the more disturbing books I've ever written. It was also 100 pages, only written on paper, and has been lost. I've considered rewriting this book, but would probably have to change 90% of the plot. The whole cabin and wolves thing is pretty lame. So again, that's 12. And he's like, they're attacking each other sexually. It's probably the most disturbing thing I wrote. I was 12. 3, Sky Gray, written at age 13. This book was about a lonely old redneck who is abducted by a UFO as a kid that has a second encounter with the bug-eyed aliens. But this time, he captures one of them, but instead of showing the town folk to prove that he wasn't crazy, he decides to lock it in his basement and torment it as they tormented him. Eventually, he finds solace in raping the alien. He puts a wig on it, lipstick, a dress, and pretends it is a woman. He eventually falls in love with the creature, and he descends further and further into madness until he dies of some kind of infectious disease. About 150 pages. It has also been lost to time. This is when he was 13. Poon Master Flex mouthing, what the fuck, over there. Now see, this is the... When I was 13, this is who I would want to be my friend. I'd be like, that weird smelly kid, but he writes the most fucked up shit. It's so weird. It's so great. Let's see. Kiss the Sun. Written at age 13, a book about a girl who had the power to bring inanimate objects to life if she kissed them. Eventually, this 100-page book was rewritten into a more condensed story with the same name that was published in my collection, Sunset with a Beard. 5, Megadeths. Written at age 14. For some reason, I didn't think anyone would notice that I named the book after the band of the same name, but it was pretty decent, though horribly written, 100-page post-apocalypse book about what life would be like if the world was turned inside out, literally. The surface of the earth becomes an ocean of lava, and the core of the planet becomes a maze of upside-down cities. Kind of an absurd post-apocalypse, complete with two-dimensional survivors trying to rebuild civilization in the dark center of the planet. This is like a kid who, you know... I'm glad they... It doesn't seem like they put this kid on Adderall. 6. The Wind in the Cloud. Written at age 14 or 15, although I thought my fiction was getting better, the ideas were getting worse. I started getting into drugs and philosophy and wrote this 1,000-page epic about a bunch of teenagers, each one addicted to a different kind of drug, that start their own religion and try to take over the universe. They become gods and battle each other in metaphysical realms for supremacy. It was the worst book ever written by anyone. Now, that's quite the claim. This guy's a little full of himself. Oh, man. 7. Midnight Falls. Written at age 15. An epic book about a cult of shape-shifting people living underground that invade a small town. Probably 600 pages too long. Too many characters, too many subplots. The first book I actually typed up and still have stored on an old computer somewhere. See, that would be great to go back to a book you wrote when you were like 15. At least his books when he was 15 were about something, I guess. I mean, he remembers what they're about, which is really interesting. The Emanation Factor. Written at age 15. This was actually a stage play, but it was about 400 pages long. More like an epic novel. It follows the lives of three generations of men during the course of one day. However, in this book, one day lasts 100 years rather than 24 hours. I believe I still have this one, even though the giant tome was only written on paper. Handwritten 400-page book. When he was 15. What a strange... This is like, okay, when people are like, if you could go back in time and meet somebody, you know, I'd be like, I kind of want to meet this guy when he's like 15 and just like watch him and be like, what are you doing with your life? Who are you? The Dream People. Written at age 16, a 500-page book about aliens who live in the dimension of thought. When the aliens visit Earth, they see the world only as what it is inside of our minds. They attempt to terraform our brainscapes to be suitable for their survival. This causes mental breakdowns, severe shifts in personalities, and strokes in some individuals. When people dream, they enter the surreal alien world and interact with the creatures that live there. The more their society flourishes, the more ours plunges into mindless chaos. I thought it was an okay book, but I was never satisfied with it. I created a short story in a webzine in 1999 based off the title of this book. Let's see, 10. Rolling World, written at age 16, an unfinished 100 or so page book about a guy who has rolling vision or acid ocean eyes. Eventually, his hallucinatory vision becomes real and the entire world begins to shift and roll and distort around him. In college, I turned this book into a screenplay and changed the plot around quite a bit. Eventually, I renamed the screenplay Satan Burger and reworked that screenplay into the novel of the same name. So Satan Burger began when he was 16. 11. Symphony of Existence. Written at age 16 or 17, this was the most pretentious piece of crap I have ever written, but is pretty much the most creative in its details. I've gutted this book for ideas for many of my future books. Most of it was used in my book Skinhead Girls. It was about as good as Electric Jesus Corpse, but twice as long. The basic premise was that the world took place in a symphony. Every character represented a different instrument player in the symphony. The Blue Women first appeared in this book. It took place in a dystopian future where everyone was forced to wear smiley face masks all the time and forced to be homosexual. There was a lot to this book. Yeah, I would say so. I created a whole mythology that was later used in books like Satan Burger and especially Electric Jesus Corpse. I thought of getting this book published before under a pen name as a joke because it is hilariously self-indulgent, but I decided it was more pathetic and embarrassing than it was funny. And finally, Electric Jesus Corpse, written at age 17 or 18. This is the only of my early books that has made it to print. I believe it never should have been published, though. It was the masterpiece of the books I wrote as a teenager, but I think it's still too imperfect for publication and should have been majorly reworked. Still, some people seem to really like it despite its many flaws, so it's still in print. No book can really be perfect anyway. After this book, I said goodbye to epics and tried to focus on shorter, more compact books. And here we are. So let me just tell you a couple of the books he's got right now. Let's see, there's one called As She Stabbed Me Gently in the Face. A Sociopathic Killer Meets an Even More Sociopathic Victim, Dark and Strange. So these all have like a quick description and then like descriptors about, you know, what it's like. Let's see. Clusterfuck. A bunch of douchebag frat boys get trapped in a cave with subterranean cannibal mutants and try to survive not by using their wits, but by following the bro code. Comical and violent. This is what I like about these books too. Like, I'd never seen a book before that had the word fuck on the cover. Like, that's not a thing. Cuddly Holocaust. A tale of survival set in a world where most of the human race has been exterminated by vicious stuffed animals. Apocalyptic and brutal. Let's see. Tumor Fruit. Seven castaways stranded on a bizarre deserted island must go to extremes in order to survive. Surreal and disturbing. Armadillo Fists. Set in a world where people drive mechanical dinosaurs instead of cars, a female boxer with armadillo hands is on the run from deranged monsters. Pulpy and fun. I Knocked Up Satan's Daughter. A parody of romantic comedies about a man who finds himself engaged to a succubus who's pregnant with his child. Light and satirical. Let's see. The Morbidly Obese Ninja. A 700-pound killing machine must go against his corporate employers in order to save a terminal child. Pulpy and fun. So that gives you kind of an idea of what we're kind of talking about. We've got erotic and horrific, campy and fucked up, pulpy and awesome, cute and relevant, absurd and horrific, satirical and pulpy, satirical and absurd. So there you go. That's what we're talking about today. The weird world of Carlton Mellick III, bizarro literature, and the unpublished works. You know, at least now we all know. We don't have to torture ourselves wondering what could have been. We know what could have been and what isn't, because these manuscripts were lost. I'd like to think that these, like, 100-page handwritten books and 400-page handwritten books are somewhere. That someone's just got them, and they're like, you know, when they have a party and most of the people leave, there's, like, three people left, they bust them out. And they're like, I've been holding on to this since I was in sixth grade. There was this fucking kid I went to school with who wrote this. You are not going to believe this. And then they pull out a thing and it says, the Electric Jesus Corpse. And they're like, oh my God. All right. Well, that's it. That's Wednesday, October 12th. We'll see you on Thursday the 13th for, you know, something horrifying. See you tomorrow.